But, you know, between you and me, I'm not going to do that.
You and me and the rest of the people that are listening.
don't tell them.
Welcome to the Geek and Review, the podcast focused on innovative and creative ideas in the legal industry. I'm Marlene Gaybauer.
And I'm Greg Lambert. So Marlene, before we get too far into the show, I wanted to state that I think that we have the best music of any podcast out there.
I would have to agree with that.
So it's great having Jerry David DeSica's music on the show. And what's really cool is that Jerry is releasing a brand new album tomorrow called The Unlikely Optimist and His Domestic Adventures.
That's a great title.
That's a mouthful. So as an added bonus, my fellow legal information professional and Jackson Walker research attorney Eve Searles is a major collaborator on the album, and she's playing the organ and she's singing on a number of the songs. So if you like the music that you hear, go check out Jerry's Spotify page and his Bootcamp site for more information and how to buy the and download the music. So The Unlikely Optimist is available starting Friday, October 16th.
I can't wait to hear it.
All right, so off from the music, and let's get on to this week's information inspirations. So Marlene, one of the things that I tell attorneys and others in my own firm is that we usually don't lack for resources here, but what we lack for is knowing which resource to use at the right time. And I don't think that that's necessarily a concept that's limited to me and my firm. You know, we have all kinds of great resources for the legal industry, but what we lack is a way to find what resources work best for our individual needs. So a friend of ours, Nikki Shaver from Paul Hastings, along with her spouse, Chris Ford, from the legal tech company Zero, have created an online research tool called Legal Tech Hub. And this categorizes and lists resources available in the legal tech market. And Bob Ambrogi has a great overview of the product on his LawSite blog and some of the background on why Nikki and Chris built the product. And one of the nice things about Legal Tech Hub is that you can not only search for products as a consumer of legal tech, but if you are a developer of a product or a vendor, they have it where you can actually put your product on the site for free.
Yeah, I saw this post, and so I was really excited about it. And you know, again, I mean, it is free. It is free to search, and it's free to post.
And you know, we like free.
We love free.
We love free.
We love it. So our podcast today is about remote versus in-person working conditions. What I've been hearing is more of a continued work environment or a hybrid model. And while there are certainly exceptions based on type of work, workers seem to be very accepting and, you know, maybe even a little happy about that sort of arrangement. However, a recent Wall Street Journal article, you know, just had to dampen the mood.
Well, it is the Wall Street Journal, so you know it's pro business.
As it does, and says companies are thinking that work from home isn't really so great. So they mention that projects are taking longer and training is tougher. You know, we're going to be covering some of this actually in the actual podcast today. Hiring and integrating new employees is more complicated. Some employers say their workers appear less connected, and bosses fear young professionals aren't developing at the same rate as they would in offices, sitting next to colleagues and absorbing how they do their jobs. Yeah. And you know, one benefit of working face-to-face is that we're missing a spontaneous interaction moment. So being able to have those conversations that won't happen on a Zoom call. So, you know, the executives are starting to say, well, this might not be sustainable. And you know, I agree with some of the arguments. I don't think projects take longer across the board. And I've actually seen projects move more quickly with things like daily Scrum meetings and chats. And, you know, spontaneous interaction is definitely harder, but not impossible. What I really wonder is whether executives are up to the challenge of taking a new look at how workflow should operate in our new normal, and making that change, or if it's just easier for everybody to fall back onto old patterns.
Probably easier to fall back on old patterns.
You think?
Well, Marlene, my last inspiration may actually be more of a desperation than an inspiration. So, and it's been the experiences that I've had over the past few weeks. So I've gone to a number of online conferences recently. Right now, I think it's day 2 of 4 for the Clio conference. Last week, I was at the College of Law Practice Management conference. I was at a local law library meeting today. So there's a lot going on, and it's good content that's out there. Mm-hmm. But I have to tell you, I struggle to focus on the content that was made available. And I've paid for these conferences. So it's not like, you know, these are free conferences and it's not a big deal if I skip out on them. But one of the things I could do is I could go back and look at the, you know, the videos, rewatch some of the sessions or watch some of the sessions that were recorded. But, you know, between you and me, I'm not going to do that.
You and me and the rest of the people that are listening.
don't tell them.
So when
speaking of the other people that are listening, what I'd like to do is reach out to the listeners and see if someone has kind of figured this out. If you kind of know what you're doing to be able to commit time to these online conferences in a way that you're able to focus and actually get some value from the content, hit me up on Twitter at Glambert. Tell me your strategy or leave me a voicemail on our hotline at 713-487-7270. And help me out. Help me find a way to make these more valuable than what I'm getting.
So if we're going back to the office, according to the Wall Street Journal, we're going to have to get used to communicating in masks, which, you know, is really easier said than done when you think about it. Mm-hmm. You're muffled, your facial expressions are blocked. You know, we may have to train ourselves.
Which may not be a bad thing.
That's true. That might work in some people's favor. So, you know, but we really may have to train ourselves on a whole new way of communicating. Harvard Business Review had a great article the other day on how to build rapport with a mask on. And so I want to share a few of their suggestions.
All right.
Some of these are, you know, you've heard them before. Some of them are a little amusing, but, you know, let's go through them. So first of all, don't wear a clear mask. Unless you're communicating with a deaf person, it's probably not a good idea. But honestly, it might not even be a good idea then because they probably cloud up and your breath condensation looks a little creepy.
Yes, it does.
Yes, it does. Practice your mask voice. And, you know, I read this and I thought this may be one situation where speaking loudly really does make you better understood. So when practicing your mask voice, you should pause. So normally visual cues of the mouth help us see when a speaker is pausing for a response. And since we can't see that now, make a conscious effort to pause here and there to give people opportunities to jump in and respond. And it also breaks up your message into digestible chunks. So you accentuate. So you avoid being boring by accentuating key phrases and information, but don't always accentuate it in the same way. You know, you use different intonations like you would normally. Volume, as I mentioned before, masks have a slightly muffling effect, slightly. So speak up, but, you know, don't yell. And emotion, you know, in appropriate moments, try and make your voice more expressive by conveying positive emotions like excitement, awe, gratitude, and sympathy. You know, but do this in moderation. Otherwise, you sound like you are acting. Use gestures and body language, and I'm just going to leave that there. And speaking of gestures and body language, mirror what your counterpart does, and that is supposed to build rapport. Smile with your eyes, which, you know, I think we've all
smize.
We've all heard about that. Mm-hmm. And keep the two T's aligned, and the T's are toes and torso. So face who you're speaking with, and don't turn like you want to run away. Even though you might want to run away.
Yeah.
And that wraps up this week's Information Inspirations.
So Richard Hsu and I go back all the way back to our King and Spalding days. But nowadays, he's working on the recruiting side of the legal industry, and he has some really interesting ideas of why the workplace model facing law firms might be more of a struggle than we're anticipating. We are now exactly 7 months into the pandemic here in the United States, and for many in the legal industry, it's been about that same amount of time since they've actually worked side by side with their fellow lawyers and legal professionals. So we asked Richard Hsu, Managing Director at Major Lindsay in Africa, to come in and talk with us, give us his perspective on what the law firm office may look like once this pandemic is over.
Richard, thanks for taking the time to talk with us.
Marlene, it's always been a pleasure. I've known Greg for many, many years, and it's always good to be invited to speak on his podcast.
Well, we've heard a lot of projections on what the new work environment will look like after the pandemic. What do you think will happen once we're allowed to fully reoccupy our physical offices?
Right. Well, you know, look, a lot of stuff has been written about all the things that are missing in a remote office, and stuff has been written about, you know, the casual interactions, the culture, the discussions at the water cooler, you know, a lot of the micro interactions that happen that are very, very important in having a collegial and important workforce, things, you know, the conversations that happen, you know, in the hallways or, you know, in the elevator when you're passing somebody by. And I think all those are really true. And I'm not here to diminish any of those points. But a lot of people are wondering whether fundamentally lawyers in particular, and I'll draw upon my own experience, obviously, having been a practicing lawyer, about whether lawyers can work effectively remotely. And my personal opinion is that once the pandemic is over, lawyers will largely, by and large, go back to work office. Now, I say this for a couple of reasons. One of them, which is very fundamental to the way lawyers actually learn things and the way lawyers actually, if you look at the legal profession, is actually more like an apprenticeship. And if you think about kind of how, when I look at myself, when I look at how I learned as a young lawyer, most of what I learned or how I learned was by watching and observing and basically mimicking what senior and more experienced lawyers do. And you can't do that by Zoom. So, for example, when I was a very young litigator, you know, how did I learn to take a deposition? Well, I watched somebody else do the deposition. And I watched how he asked the questions and learned how to react and stuff. And when I think about, for example, how did I learn to negotiate contracts on behalf of my clients? Well, I listened in on, you know, calls, and I watched how they observed and interacted. And so much of being a lawyer is watching and learning. And it's very hard to do that on Zoom calls because you don't get the opportunity to observe them, you know, in a more broad sense. It has to be a very specific interaction. So I really believe that once the pandemic is over and people can go back to the office, that will become very important, essentially for that reason.
So you're talking about how it's difficult to interact with in Zoom meetings, and I completely understand that. But you know, what about things like team spaces where you know, basically everybody not only can see one another, but are sharing documents or working on documents together, are getting feedback, you know, in some of these type of huddle meetings? What sort of future does that have?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad you asked that because I think, and again, this is a probably, you know, slightly contrarian, but part of the reason why I think those things kind of work now is because everybody is remote. And so it sort of levels the playing field. So if all of us are on videos and all of us are using DocShare or whatever, Microsoft, you know, Teams and so forth, it sort of works. But the real problem will be is that once the office opens back up and some people start going back, then the hybrid model, I think, will actually accelerate people to start going back in the office. Because what's going to happen is those people that remain on Zoom are going to feel like second-class citizens. They're going to feel like they're at a real disadvantage because they can't communicate as clearly. And they're not going to be able to communicate as clearly as the people that are in the office. So I'm not saying that the things that you talked about, the technology doesn't work, but I think they only really work if everybody is forced to remote. And once people can go back to the office, once people start doing it, then I think people will find the need and the efficiency of doing that in order to really, you know, stay effective.
Yeah, I'm wondering, Richard, do you think there are some lawyers out there who truly believe that they will never go back and have a permanent office in a physical space again, even if their coworkers go back?
Well, there definitely are. I mean, there definitely are. And depending on, you know, I should obviously have, I mean, certain types of practices, which are just, you know, if, for example, you completely work alone in your practices, you know, it's a complete solo practice and you don't have the need to interact with people. You don't have the need to work with, you know, people in a group or a team, or you're certainly not training any junior lawyers or working with them. You know, I think those people, and even before the pandemic, there were always lawyers that, I mean, there have been lawyers that work as solo practitioners, you know, always from home and never have been in the office. So, you know, those people will continue to exist for sure. But I think for, you know, certainly in big law where, you know, lawyers work as teams, where lawyers use lots of associates, and it's important for always to be grooming junior lawyers.
You live in San Francisco and you've worked in Silicon Valley. Mm-hmm. It is not cheap mm-hmm. living there. It is not cheap working.
And the commute's terrible.
And yep. So one of the things that I think a lot of professionals, you know, and we'll stay with the legal profession, but yep. you know, there's a lot of people in Silicon Valley that are, you know, that are smacking their lips trying to figure out if they can go buy that ranch in Montana mm-hmm. and cool. you know, as long as they got a solid internet connection can work from there. And I think even Facebook is saying, yeah, you can work wherever you want. You get paid whatever the local rates are for that area. But if you want to move to Montana and get Montana pay, we can do that. Can we do something like that in legal?
Well, that's the thing is, I really don't think so. I really think that what will happen, like I said, and it won't happen right away because right now everybody's remote. So it doesn't matter whether you're in San Francisco or Montana. But I believe what's going to happen is when the office opens back up and people start going back to work, the person that's in Montana is going to feel very much distance and going to feel like a second-class citizen and is going to feel very disconnected from the people that are in the office. So really, a lot of the problems that I'm talking about are actually not happening right now, again, because everybody is remote. But when the so-called hybrid model is starting to introduce, when people start coming back to office, that's when I think people will really notice it. And, you know, I'm drawing my experience from obviously having been a practicing lawyer for 25 years. But even when I think about my days as an engineer, which I was before I went to law school, when I think about how I did most of my learning from as being an engineer, it was very much, you know, again, the same kind of watching and learning from more experienced programmers and observing what they were doing. And again, those are really, really hard to do just over Zoom. I mean, again, a lot of those happen very spontaneously. Those are very situational things that come up and you teach somebody, okay, this is how you do this here, and this is how you do that there. Those cannot be scheduled. Those are very hard to learn in a classroom setting. So I think for all those reasons, I think it's going to be really, really tough.
So do you think that there's actually an expectation that there's going to be a hybrid model, you know, that some stay at home and some work in the office? And how do you think this is going to play out with leadership of the firm when it comes to trusting that those they don't see very often? We've talked a little bit about how it's important to learn to have people together, but what about trust issues?
Well, I don't honestly, at least in the law firm, I don't see that as being an issue because I think, you know, lawyers by and large are very hard workers, and there's, you know, there's often deliverables that lawyers work towards, whether they're drafting documents or writing briefs or so. I think there's enough metrics, so I don't think the trust issue is going to be there. But I just feel like, you know, and I think the hybrid model is going to be the way that law firms are going to initially, that's how they're going to try to accomplish this goal. They're going to tell people, and either that's because for health reasons or on a more permanent basis, they might try to say, you know, they will probably give people the option to work from home. But I just go back to the point that I think that will be very unstable, and I just don't see that really working.
I think you're right. I think we're probably going to roll into this hybrid model, and we might be there for a number of years. And so is this about setting expectation for leadership about how they're going to work with remote workers? Are these going to be viewed as lesser value lawyers because they aren't able to deliver the results that their counterparts will be able to do because they are actually physically in the office?
Right. Well, I mean, look, I think it remains to be seen how this will work. mean, a couple things that strike me is, I mean, I believe, like I said, I don't think the hybrid model is going to work. So one of two things kind of has to happen. Either you kind of force everybody to all go back to being remote. I could see that as sort of one way of kind of re-leveling the playing field. In other words, which I know seems kind of awkward, but I could sort of see that as one possibility. The other possibility is that if the number of remote workers is relatively small, I think that can also be managed more effectively. And in any specific individual, I don't know how they're going to feel about, you know, feeling again, being more distanced. But, you know, even pre-pandemic, law firms typically had, you know, there were always a handful of people that always work remotely. And I think that can be kind of managed. But to have a team where half is remote and half is in the office for, you know, group, for kind of the kind of work where people need to work in groups, I think that will be hard, very hard to manage. But I could see, for example, Greg, like one thing that I think is totally possible is, for example, you've been on conference calls where three people are in the office and three people are remote. And it's almost impossible for people to be remote to really participate. I mean, we know that for a fact. Yeah. If everyone's on Zoom, that can kind of work. But if three people are on, it just doesn't work. So one possibility, for example, I could see, and this is to your question, like, for example, let's say the three people are in the office. They insist that everybody participate in that meeting by computer, even if they're in the office. So now I could see that working. I mean, it's very artificial and it seems silly, but I could see that facilitating, for example, a meeting. So at least they can conduct the meeting. But of course, the thing that's going to happen is as soon as that meeting's over, three people in the office are going to huddle together and talk all about it, you know, and so it kind of defeats the whole purpose. But those are the kind of artificial things I could see to kind of try to make the hybrid model work.
Do you think that there may be a difference of opinion when you're talking generationally in terms of what the preference or comfort level will be in terms of being remote or not being remote? You know, perhaps those are who are more, you know, digital natives will be like, that's, you know, that's absolutely fine. I can learn this way and it doesn't bother me. But yet, you know, other people who are not may say, you know, I'm not comfortable with that.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's certainly entirely possible. I mean, I definitely recognize the fact that I'm, you know, a mid to late career lawyer. And so that definitely.
I did not imply that.
That's definitely a possibility. But I kind of feel like, you know, the way human beings learn is not something that's just happened over the last, you know, two generations. This is, you know, the way human beings learn is kind of goes back to the way the human species works. And, you know, if you believe fundamentally that we learn things by observing and we learn things by mimicking, and that I think is pretty much into our hardware. That's not a software update that happened in the last 20, 30 years. You know, I don't think in long term it's going to be very effective. And I think I could see, for example, like a gap. If this goes on for a really long time, I could see a gap in expertise and training, for example, in young lawyers where they never really learned a lot of things that, you know, we typically see. So, you know, again, this all depends on how long on the thing that the pandemic goes for. But that's my feeling.
And then just for the record, I mean, I agree with that learning with somebody there, there's just an ease of interaction that you don't necessarily have when it's digital.
I mean, when you think about yourself and all the things and how you learn things, you know, especially in a professional environment, it was mainly, you know, interacting with people. And, you know, certainly for lawyers, when you think about how much, you know, they talk about the science, but, you know, when you think about how much law school helped you become a practicing lawyer, it's usually very little, because the reality is most practicing lawyer is from those interactions that you learn and watch and observe from other lawyers, not from what you learn reading a book of contracts, you know. And so, I mean, so when you think about, you know, and lawyers talk about this all the time, how law students come out and they don't know anything, at least not how to practice law. They know, you know, a lot of knowledge, legal knowledge. So that's kind of where, that's my thinking.
This sort of hybrid or, you know, completely remote sort of model, is this going to impact the thought in any way of you know, outsourcing attorneys, do you think?
Interesting. In what way? Like the fact that like that will increase the amount of outsourcing or?
Yeah, well, I mean, I will firms be more open to that idea, given the fact that people, you know, they're getting used to people working remotely, and, you know, would that sort of open the door to more outsourced work?
Right. More outsourced work. Yeah. By using more independent contractors and that sort of thing. Is that what you're talking about? Yeah. I would probably agree with that. I mean, law firms already started moving towards that whenever they needed, you know, when you think a lot about e-discovery and things like that are a lot largely outsourced to non-full-time lawyers. So I could see that also being sort of a growing trend and feeling that they need to have those lawyers present. But again, I think those will be tasks which, you know, are going to be like e-discovery, which are more episodic or things that, you know, are very discrete kind of projects. But I think that anything that's going to be very much involved in like the core of a client's needs, I'm not sure.
Richard, do you think that, I mean, you're in Silicon Valley area. Do you think that technology will eventually figure out ways to kind of bridge the gap for all of the things that it lacks now? You know, you talked about you got to be in the room to really kind of see the body language, to kind of see the emotion, to hear the way that the sound is projecting, you know, from different parts of the room to really get a feel for what's going on. Mm-hmm. Is this a technology issue that can be solved, or is this a human issue that unless you're in the room, you know, you're going to lose out on? What do you think?
Right. Well, that's a very good question. I mean, I'm a bit of a technology fatalist, so I do believe that everything that can be invented ultimately will. And so it does, I mean, a logical thing would be to think that at some point the technology will be so good and so accurate that, you know, that you can essentially mimic it in the room. But, you know, we're still pretty long way from there probably. And so I certainly think, at least in my lifetime, I don't see that happening to a point where, you know, you could really replace being in the room. And even if the technology is so good that you can be in the room and mimic it, again, that's not the real core of what I'm saying is that the thing about the watching, observing, I mean, that's really the constant sort of being right there, right? So this is not about whether when we are on the Zoom call, it's so good that it's like we're being in the room. It's the fact that you and I are in the office next door, you know, and constantly interacting in a way. You know, that would have to be like if your camera were on all day and my camera were on all day or something like that, you know, which, you know, anyway, so again, that. The points that I'm making here is not really so much about how good the technology is, although, you know, it does have a long distance way to go. I mean, clearly, if you have many people on Zoom call, you know how well that works.
Yeah, my answer is eventually the Star Trek holodeck. We'll just create that.
that's certainly maybe not in our lifetime, but you're right.
Yeah. Well, let me wrap this up by asking something that Marlene and I and other legal information professionals we've had to deal with for 25 years. And I think the legal industry is now coming to this realization as well, mm-hmm. is that, you know, for the longest time, we were thought of by the location that we were in. For the library, it was, you know, it was the shelf with the books and the people were there with the shelf with the books. You know, law firms are seen as a brick and mortar, some 40 story tall building downtown, you know, that you occupy the top five floors with beautiful views and beautiful conference rooms. But that's really not what a law firm is. It's not necessarily about the location. And I think this pandemic is kind of accelerating this paradigm shift within, and it's not just law firms, it's law schools and courts are also finding this. So is this really something that, you know, the law firm's just going to go back to being a place, or do you think this is a paradigm shift and it's now going to be seen as a service and the law firm's going to have to adjust and figure out ways to train and mentor and facilitate, you know, lawyers and clients that aren't necessarily physically in a building?
Well, I think, I mean, the answer is it is and it isn't. I mean, I think the part about the paradigm shift.
That's a great lawyer answer.
Exactly. It is and isn't. Exactly. Yes and no. How's that? Yes. You know, the paradigm shift part is definitely the fact that lawyers can deliver legal services remotely. I mean, that was understood, but now that's completely, you know, that bears reality. And so the fact that the physical offices is no barrier at all to be able to deliver legal services efficiently to clients, and clients don't need to see their lawyers, and clients don't need to know where their lawyers are physically. I mean, that's clearly true. And that has been proven now. I mean, this year, law firms are busier than ever with, you know, legal, with clients and legal work. So I think that part's different. I think the part that's not remains to be seen, or I'm skeptical about, is more on the work side, is whether the lawyers can work effectively remotely. Clearly, the service is delivered absolutely by its problems.
All right. Well, Richard, it was great talking with you. You know, thanks for coming on and sharing your thoughts on something that, you know, we're all eventually going to have to face this.
Thank you.
Yeah. Greg and Marlene, always a pleasure.
It's always a good conversation with Richard. I see a lot of truth in the assessment of the industry as we move forward, getting people back into the offices full time. So, Marlene, do you think we might be a little too Pollyannish in our projections on how law firms will function in this the type of hybrid working model?
I have never been told that I've been Pollyannish, but you know, I was playing devil's advocate there for a while, and you know, but you know, Richard really had some very good arguments in favor of being face-to-face. In many ways, it really does make a difference in terms of how you interact with people, and particularly when you don't know people. Yeah. And, you know, if we're sort of in this situation where people aren't having the opportunity to, you know, get to know people in person, you know, this is just something that sort of continues to build.
Yeah. And this, I think this falls in the category of this is a challenge and a change in the structure of how we work. And there will be those who figure it out, and there will be those who get left behind. So I say you should start thinking about how you're going to figure it out.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think so too, because, you know, while people are facing a lot of stress now, I mean, that's really because of the situation with the pandemic. That's not necessarily because you're working remotely. And I think people are really starting to, you know, recognize, you know, workers are starting to recognize the benefits of working remotely, and the fact that there's a lot less stress in certain ways, of being able to work and maintain a personal balance.
Yeah. Well, thanks again to Lindsay Major and Africa's Richard Hsu for joining us today.
Thank you very much, Richard. It was great. Before we go, we want to remind listeners to take the time to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Rate and review us as well. If you have comments about today's show or suggestions for a future show, you can reach us on Twitter at @GayBauerM or at @Glambert, or you can call the Geek & Review hotline at 713-487-7270, or email us at geekandreviewpodcast@gmail.com. And as always, the music you hear is from Jerry David DeSica. Download his new album.
Yeah, go buy it. All right, Marlene, I will talk with you later.
Okay, bye-bye.